Welcome back to Deep Thoughts, ladies and gentlemen. We're back at the lounge here, so I figure this is a good place to record, if any. I thought today we'd revisit a bunch of the moon argument and then just branch out into sort of tangent theories that relate to what's going on here because, you know, I know that you guys experience this too, where you get on a particular conspiracy and it's interesting to you, so you break it down. You go for it. And then someone says, why do you follow that? Why do you care so much about this and that? And don't you, you know, aren't you afraid of looking stupid and all this other kind of stuff? And it's a passion of yours, and you know that you didn't go after, say, the moon missions being faked because that's what you actually wanted to know. It's interesting to you. And if they did fake it, it's even more interesting to you. But it's not like you really wanted that information in the end. You didn't really want the drama of it not being true. Because there's the moon argument, the whole moon mission argument. And it's what's really interesting, and we've talked about it a lot over the last 7 years. It's generational. The older you are, the more you hang on to this accomplishment as your own vicarious accomplishment. So to you, it may matter and it may not matter. If you're 50 and over, it's going to matter more and more each decade that you get older and older. What's really strange about the whole moon mission thing is, I guess it's almost a subliminal thing that all men and women, we all want to go to the moon. Like, we all want to know, hey, wow, that's a world out there. And I can actually take a telescope or a really good camera and I can look at it and I can see the surface. And man, wouldn't it be cool to be there? And I think this would happen and has happened prior to any fictional scenario in the last 150 years by H.G. Wells and others to actually be on the moon. So in Plato's time and all the Native Americans and everyone everywhere all the time, they see this place in the sky. Now, again, until they told you that the world was a disc or a globe, you may not perceive, honestly, the moon as another place. It might just be a postage stamp floating in the sky. Certainly the sun would evade any heliocentric hydrogen ball model for a really long time. Till we could filter some light and see potentially a surface and it rotating and get kind of a sense that it's a ball up there too. But now new generations are coming in. New generations that don't give a F-bomb about anything at all. What they're looking for is validation that potentially they're on the right track, that they're not going to end up in a ditch dead, you know, in their teens and 20s. They want to know that they're smart, because I think that there's a really interesting thing about man wanting to be smart. It's a really strange thing. It's almost an instinctual programming thing to say those who were smart prospered and those that weren't died early. There has to be some sort of coding within our genetics that keeps us alive, whether it be that we learned it by sheer experience of evolution or whether or not God invented us, put us down here as full Homo sapiens sapien, and the code from Westworld's active. Now, if God made us and put us in this world, are we in a God matrix, for instance? Are we truly in a real reality? Reality, when we were young and in the 70s and 80s, is just one thing. It's how sentient are you? Sure, there were existentialistic philosophers that came in and parsed, you know, the definition of is, right? Bill Clinton being one of the biggest experts in that. But as we have created video games and movies to the point of like craziness, I'm sure the people in the movie industry, well before the 70s, obviously, were seeing, oh my God, look what we're doing here. But when we made a simulation of reality in a video game that was a single player game, then a multiplayer game, then a massive multiplayer online game, and then role-playing to add a little bit more genre to it and tense to it, what reality actually ends up being for the current human being, I was trying to say Homo sapien or human, said at the same time, it changes. It changes the whole paradigm of where we think we are and where God may have put us if you just simply believe in God and a flat earth, right? Now, don't get all pissed off. I entertain both sides of the fence because if you can hear my voice, you haven't been in space. You just haven't. You haven't seen the earth. For any of you who've looked at all the pictures of Earth from all the space programs over the last 40 years, hell, 55 years, it's all bullshit. All the pictures we've seen are complete bullshit, right? It's a composite. It has to be. It's a composite. It has to be, says the last artist that made the full picture of Earth from space at NASA and was interviewed by this girl. It's a composite. It has to be. That's what the fucking artist said who was working for NASA making this picture. Why is that, Joe? Why can't you just fly out into space and take a picture of the Earth? I mean, how many times have we been to Mars already? You know, how many times have we been to the moon? Just turn around and take a picture. Nope, but the blue marble shot from the Apollo 17 has been heavily edited right at the Red Sea, which was all screwed up. You realize that the red marble shot coming back from Apollo 17, supposedly, which is a bunch of high-altitude photographs stitched together, is a smoking gun that we never went to the moon. That's all you need. You don't need anything else. There are hundreds of examples of why we didn't go, but all you need is that one. Isn't that phenomenal? They messed up the Red Sea. It's all ziggly-zaggly. The Earth, you know, is touching the other side, and it's not even a straight. And then they modified it. Didn't tell anybody in the world and re-released it. Unfortunately, these photographs were printed in books and distributed to everyone in the military, everyone in NASA. Everyone could buy these books just as soon as they said they went. And that's why they don't like books. Because books are recorded history in print that cannot be just easily erased with the click of a button. Rollerball 1970. Was it 75, right? James Caan. Hey. They lost the 12th century in the middle of that movie. It was a fictional movie, but that's what they won. We keep looking at Tartaria. This reset theory. Oh, I think we've been reset. It just depends on what the fabric of the universe is as to how that would actually take place. Apparently, it is not a computer simulation because why would there be any teardown? Why would there be any build up? There'd never be a building. There's a lot of evidence that buildings just seem to appear overnight with no construction photographs, but why would they ever tear them down? You just simply push pause, delete the building, write it into all the history books that it was torn down. No pictures of the actual deconstruction of these buildings, but they seem to come and go willy-nilly. And they're out in the middle of the jungles, man. I mean, it's just unbelievable how these incredibly modern buildings that would normally last several hundred years are already in a patinaed state of falling apart by the time we take the first photograph in the 1800s. But I said a long time ago, I really don't think that the younger generations give a crap of whether or not we went to the moon. They've been lied to their entire life, and the moon thing was never something they celebrated, right? They were raised with the notion we went to the moon to tell them that we never went. As I warned in several episodes, they have extinguished the desire to ever go. Because they teach kids that we went. And by the time some of them learn that we didn't go, they're like, eh, whatever. I can't even pay for gas to go across the street, man. I got student loans, you know, like I'm on the bottom of the ocean. And the student loan debt's way up there 7 miles. What do you want me to do? They don't care. But I watched this, and this is interesting. It's going to sound like a little bit of a broken record, but I'll tell you what. It's going to be interesting. Riff Tracks. I keep telling you guys, I'm watching these old movies. It's a great service. They make fun of movies while you watch it. Okay, you get to learn a lot about film, trust me, by seeing a bunch of crappy movies being made. But these guys will take pot shots at conspiracy theorists the entire time. There are three guys in the United States, two women in the United States, one married to one of the three guys, and there's two dudes over in the UK. That comprises pretty much the entire channel with guest appearances. There's one with Fred Willard for missiles. Missile to the Moon is one of the greatest things with Fred Willard. They did it again with the three guys, but Fred Willard, God bless his soul, is not with us anymore. But his version of the thing is fantastic. But these guys take huge pot shots at all the conspiracy theorists. Now, I might even agree with some of the ones that they take pot shots at, but they'll go after a bunch of them that we know are very, very real. Frustrating. Is that how they get their funding, that they are willing to take all these pot shots? They had the guy from the that debunk show, I'll just put it that way, the blonde hair guy wears the horn or big thick glasses. I was at a party once. This dude shows up at Sid Mead's house once. And I couldn't bring myself to walk downstairs and even say hi to this guy, because he did the 9/11 one, where he blessed all of the bullshit official story stuff. And I just was like, man, I'm going to want to punch him in the fucking face. You know, it's like, I don't want to have anything to do with this guy. He's been on a riff tracks. They couldn't get more of his junk on their chin. They worship this guy. They feel like, you know, hey. So they're basically brilliant dudes who do comedy, and they don't just make fun of what's in the movie. They actually add a whole narrative over and over and over to a particular film. But they brought that guy on, and oh my God, if they could have been pregnant men from his semen, they would have actually copulated with this guy one at a time on the stage. They just couldn't get enough of this guy. And why is that? Why am I bringing that up in a Moon Debate movie or episode, right? Because for them, they're not scientists, they're comedians. When you devote yourself to something else other than science, but you really are intelligent and you wish you maybe had that other knowledge, it is a way to somehow pretend like you actually have that knowledge by making fun of those who've actually done all the experience, all the research, excuse me, and have the experience in this stuff, which is every single one of you who are a habitual listener to this channel. It's a way for them to pull down their zipper, take a pee on you, and say, look how much smarter I am than them. I have researched nothing, but I know everything. And that's how they hang on to their fake reality. We have to understand the psychosis and the defective minds of those that are perpetuating all that is evil in this world, which is basically just a lie. Forget all of the Epstein stuff and the Satanistic stuff, okay, which is basically one and the same. They're very important subject matters. But before we even get to that crazy, nutty, eyes wide shut crap, any division or faction of society that is hanging on to a lie is a danger to society. How could it be anything other than a danger to society? And that's where we start dividing up the demographic of those who care about the moon and those who don't. Now, for a long time with the moon mission theories, the technology that contributed to rocketeering, the computers that are supposedly on board of both the service module, lunar lander, and the rocket itself, plus mission control, no one could understand remotely what these people did. But now your average teenager is a coder. And so now they understand what it would take to logistically pull off what they claim to have been done. Then they look at the differential between the average computing power of a watch that you wear on your wrist versus what they said was inside these space vehicles. And we start to realize, wow, I could not land on the moon with the power that's inside of an iWatch, or an Apple Watch, excuse me. Couldn't do it. Couldn't do it with the laptop I'm staring at right now. But these guys did it with nothing. Over and over and over again, flawlessly, besides the, you know, fake anomaly in Apollo 13. Again, like I said before, a lot of these movies that I've seen over the last, last several years from my life, but the chronology of the films that I'm watching are from the 30s up. There's an overwhelming, echoing sentiment about everything that is what they want you to believe. From paleontology, the belief in dinosaurs, to all the cosmology of exactly where we are, and especially from the second that this agenda hatched in Hollywood, how insignificant and ridiculous we are as human beings in relation to the universe. There's always this minimizing algorithm when it comes to us being in the universe. We can't remain fascinating and amazing and literally the jackpot of absolute all consciousness. We have to be immediately subjugated and minimized down to pissant living creatures as related to the next thing we're going to find in the universe. We are always going to find a super intelligent thing next, not just something, not just bacteria on a rock. We got to find super intelligent things. We always have to feel utterly inferior. Anything that makes you inferior allows yourself to be opened up to authoritarianism. And boy, they have a plenty of candidates in there that are going to run for office over your life. The more that you believe that you are insignificant, the more they can hatch these theories on top of you, these world agendas on top of you, to tell you that, one, you're physically so inept in your creation, which negates all evolutionary theory and all creationism, that you need to take a regimen of shots in order to be just basically healthy. No commercials on TV ever systemically go after the cause of your illness. They want to give you pills and shots and all kinds of stuff to fix you after the fact. When do we wake up? When do we wake up and say, okay, wait. Yeah, you told us the cigarettes were super good for us in the 1900s, and we're done. We're done with that bunch of bullshit. You snuck a bunch of GMO foods into our food supply, thus all the fertility clinics blow up because no one can have any kids because these GMO foods are terminated in their gene sequence, thus terminating the gene sequence in human beings. And so now we have octomoms. Then our guts get so damaged in the 21st century, they launch probiotics so we can basically mask the horrible effect of what they've done to our food supply. No one's planning any change, and no one's making any change. The only thing you could possibly do as an individual is take your family to an organic grocery store and say, if it doesn't have this little label on it, then don't buy it. I just think it's extremely interesting when I see grown men, 55 and over, absolutely positively obsess on pissing on something that you know they don't have any knowledge about. One of the big things about all of these knowledge bases is that as long as something remains a mystery to you, it sounds complicated to you. You never get invited to the party, nor do you invite yourself to the party. So if someone says, for instance, that astrophysics is something that they study, well, that's just a big title, isn't it? What does that involve? Well, lots of mathematics, I'll tell you that much. And even though you may not personally be able to get to a blackboard and solve a big equation, you could definitely, as a layman, understand any one of the algorithms that they're trying to solve for. But they won't explain it to you because they want you to be absolutely presence shocked by the mere words that label this area of science. The study of dinosaurs is paleontology. Oh my God, people mix that up with pathology. I mean, it's absolutely hilarious. They hide behind these barriers. Now, if you can keep the public out of a particular domain of bullshit, of theories, how much research and actual reality do you need to actually prove on the other side of a barrier? Not much. You could just have a wall in your city, and there's a little compartment in there, and it says, hey, super duper smart people on the other side of this wall. And if you're not allowed, as the layman of the rest of the clan that's in this particular area, if you're not allowed to go on the other side of that wall, for all you know, nothing's happened on the other side of the wall. It's a big orgy on the other side of the wall. It's a bunch of guys feeding their faces, doing other things. But if you bite it off and you buy what they're selling, then you're going to think that everyone behind that wall is so much more superior to you. If they come up with a few clever little sayings to get you confused, then you'd be like, okay, I'm going to try this out. I'm going to go on the other side of that wall, and I'm going to prove that I'm as smart as them. And then they ask you something, you know, some little riddle that's on a popsicle stick, and you just don't happen to know the answer to it. See, you're stupid. Go back on the other side of your wall, peasant, sheep, cattle, and mind your own business. A friend of mine sent me a video, and it's a video of I posted on the Facebook page. It has to do with an Indian guru that tells a story about Carnegie, the famous Carnegie, the super successful Carnegie. He got so successful so quickly, he made so much money that the Senate apparently pulled him in and questioned him about his entire business dealings. And they basically told themselves, we're going to find the scam of how this guy got so rich so fast. But they found out that he was completely legit. And then they asked him, they said, well, how did you amass so much money so quickly? And he said one thing. He goes, because I can concentrate on one thing for 5 minutes or more. That's how focused I am. And of course, the Senate laughs, thinking he's telling them some riddle. And so he conducts a test with the Senate to prove to them that not a single person in that building could concentrate on anything for 5 minutes or more. Ironically, when I told the story to a friend, the friend diverted within 20 seconds to run off to some other theory without listening to the rest of the story. And I said, isn't it funny? I'm telling you a story about a guy that was able to focus more than 5 minutes. And in telling you this story, you couldn't listen to me for more than 20 seconds. Isn't that interesting? And of course, this person's a host, so they just kind of go, doesn't look like anything to me, right? Going back out to a Klaus Schwab agenda. But he proved to the entire Senate that they couldn't concentrate for more than 5 minutes. And then he says at the end of his session, according to this guy, that's why none of you are qualified to run this country. Boom. Moon agenda. The moon agenda has required people to concentrate for more than 5 minutes on things, to see things a different way, to see the moon buggy as a remote control vehicle, after paying attention to the fact that the person in the moon vehicle never acts like a human being. It's just flopping around inside this thing. When people took the frames per second and adjusted them for real time, multiplying them times approximately two times the frame rate, all of a sudden everything starts looking real time. No one looks like they're floating in space. The rooster tail coming off the back of the moon buggy all of a sudden looks real time. When you start looking at the scale of things, remember when you were a kid and you watched a movie where it was like Clash of the Titans or something? And the water looked off scale when there was like a battleship thing? It's because it was a miniature. The Thunderbirds were famous for this. Although they did an amazing job with Thunderbirds. All these franchises did. But you could tell the water wasn't to scale. The water didn't have the right depth color. When a firework came off a particular vehicle, it had to be slowed down, which means they had to run the camera at twice the frame rate to slow down how the sparks were bursting out to make it look like it was covering more distance to give it scale of being bigger, because otherwise it looks like a firework stuck up the butt of some model. The Saturn V, although extremely impressive, and my God, I don't remember any one of them blowing up on the tarmac, right? Now, compared to all the rockets that we have today, a friend of mine just reposted his trip to Florida. He stood next to an erect Saturn V, which I've been there. I don't remember any one of them standing up upright. I don't know if this is not to scale. But honestly, even to scale, compared to all the stuff that apparently takes off and then immediately goes into a curved launch, it's not that big. But it was big enough at the time in 1969 to make the world think that it was actually going to the moon, that it had the ability to escape an object that's 3.6 billion times bigger than the payload that's supposedly leaving Earth's orbit, telling you that there's a slingshot mechanism, but there's no actual fuel to continue increasing the orbit to create an actual slingshot, you know, ever-increasing elliptical orbit to then eventually sling by and get to the moon. But you bought it when you were young, because why? You didn't have anything to counteract their claims. We didn't have the internet that has the entire world encyclopedia up there, plus everyone's individual critique. You can get to scientists of all kinds, independent scientists who know this is crap and those that teach the official stuff. Kids who are in Caltech who start smelling the bullshit. I got very lucky again. I got debriefed by two guys from NASA that said, look, we were told we didn't go, that we tried to go, but we can't go. So it's more important that we faked it, got the missile program going for the military, the ICBMs all locked in so they can remote launch from a Trident submarine, pop out of the water and take off 2 years after the moon mission. That's what it was all about. But today's kids, no problem. My concern is that the current new generation of leadership, like your 45s and his crew, 45 talked about the moon missions a lot. And it doesn't matter if we went up on some clandestine secret technology. I don't think we have, but even if we did, you can't go around saying that a lie is the truth. You can't. You can't meet God, in my opinion, having done that and be okay. And there's a concern of mine that I've mentioned this several times, that there's all they have to do is tell you a story as a person who's on the inside lying to the people. They tell you that chemtrails are good for you. That they create some story. They even show them some data on a piece of paper or take them to a warehouse and lift up some dust and say, this is just food, you know. And the person gets convinced because they're a retard, because they're preconditioned to follow whatever they're told, thinking that they're absolutely brilliant in everything that they've ever done. Categorically, the inverse is true. Every lie has to come out. Every lie has to come out. We are inclined to believe that one Elon Musk is on our side now, having grown up a billionaire kid with an emerald mining company in South Africa as his family, right? If you... You know, emeralds sell more than diamonds. I don't know if you guys know that, but like green emeralds sell for more than diamonds sell, pound for pound. His family mined those things out of the ground in South Africa. His family, not somebody he knew, not 30 generations away, his family. So you wonder why the kid got picked and his mother's this big 666 lady? Can't be more of a Marina Abramovich's panty line. And he's supposedly our fucking hero. Says he keeps going to Mars. Says he had a fucking helicopter that flew on Mars with 1% the atmosphere. Okay, so 1% atmosphere. So you're going to have to rotate those blades 100 times faster than the base that you would, the base speed that you'd have to do on planet Earth. Unbelievable. I get these morons sending me these videos, like friends of mine, not any listener, but friends of mine. Did you see what happened, man? We did this. I'm just like, oh my, they're not Midwesterners, actually. They know better. But my California folks, they want to believe that this is the case. And I mentioned this to you guys a while back, and I had it demonstrated to me again in real life, locally. There is definitely a point where the human mind basically goes out to lunch when you get older. It's only when you get older, and I think the closer you are to death, what ends up occurring is that the brain starts to just basically say, okay, I cannot live in a world of cynicism. I can't live in a world of negativity. So what I'm going to do is take everything that I want to believe, regardless of evidence, and I'm just simply going to believe it. Now, some of your friends will do this in isolation and never bother another human being, and others will call you up on the telephone and, did you know that we found another black hole? And it's just, it's all propaganda. It's all crap. Now that I've actually become hip to this, and I want to share this with you just in case you can do this too. I used to play piano and go visit old ladies at assisted living places, something my church got me into when I was 19, 20. And I just sit there and play piano forever. And I had three women I was taking care of. But I'd walk around and there's women who have lost their minds. And the men never ever talked to me. But the women would think that I was their son. And instantaneously, I just started being their son. I wanted them to have the best day of their lives. I'd ask them how their life was going, encourage them, talk about whatever's going on, if they're building a puzzle. I tell them, I think this place looks really nice. And, oh my gosh, will you come back and visit me? Absolutely. And I normally would. Then I moved away. That's how I'm going to treat my friends who are losing their minds and starting to pitch themselves all this stuff. It's not important that in their final years of life that I somehow change their mind about anything. This is a young person's game. Because it's a brawl of the mind, isn't it? Now, NASA's been pretty darn quiet lately, haven't they? It's all been Elon Musk. But even Elon Musk has kind of calmed down, hasn't he? We used to get Starship updates constantly. He used to post that all the time. Now it's about him supposedly trying to buy Twitter. Now, again, remember the 80-20 split. 80% truth, 20% bullshit. Again, intelligence agents have recently updated that ratio to 95-5. 95% truth, 5% total acidic lemmings guidance. I know lemmings don't really jump off of cliffs, but the analogy is still there in the human lexicon. So they're there to misguide you at the last second. Now, there's a bunch of rumors that say, maybe Elon is trying to escape his captors. Well, as long as he goes to a ball with his mother and his mother's in there going, Maria Abramovich, she's my bitch, you know. Sorry, he doesn't get to come into my club. That's all I got to tell you. He'd have to come to me, we'd have to set down some ground rules, and we'd have to have literally a schedule for him releasing the fact that he never reverse landed, you know, the fuselage of a rocket. He never landed on a barge in the middle of the ocean. He never put a roadster in space. He's never been to Mars. I mean, all that's going to have to be in the schedule, and I need to see the first item drop before I'm going to believe his heart is in the right place. Now, could someone have a gun to somebody's head? You bet. Now, the interesting thing is that we are led to believe that NASA really wants to go somewhere, that SpaceX really wants to go somewhere. The only place they want to go is in low orbit around Earth. That's it. As I said before in several episodes, there's an effort from them to convince you that nothing can go in low orbit. That is developing a Kaiser Sose algorithm in your mind. Well, there can't be anything up there in space, because space don't exist. Says the person who is going to have no capability of conceiving why they've lost their mind here on Earth. Yes, there are cellular communication technology that is sitting around as an absolute ultimate threat to humanity. People come to me all the time. Do you think that this stuff is actually affecting our health? Hell yes, I think it's affecting our health. For a very, very long time, it's been affecting our health, but no more than right now, for sure. Just in its natural operational capacity. But what you got to understand is the second that 45 or the 17 dude tries to do something, they're just going to go click. All this shit's going to go a million X broadcasting strength. And people are going to drop like flies. If they want to. NASA ain't trying to go anywhere. But to serve the communication needs of, I think, the hidden powers of the world. That's all it ever was in the first place. The whole mission to the moon thing was to get, again, ICBMs developed and perfected for all kinds of different launch mechanisms. From a submarine to a silo, etc., etc. What I think is utterly brilliant, and it's just a tangent to the subject matter, is that they actually invented a technology that we are addicted to now, which is cellular communication. They use television, and mainly television, but I'd say television and maybe music and maybe radio, to get us into a short attention span primer. And then when they delivered the smartphone, oh my God. Oh my God. The addiction to short attention span, a.k.a. the Carnegie, that was a Dale Carnegie, his whole theory of not being able to concentrate for 5 minutes. Oh, my God. Do you realize he said that, I believe, in the 30s? That's 90 years ago. And no one in the Senate could pass the test. Not even a single senator could pass the test. Not surprising. 5 minutes is a long time when you think about it. Anyone who's in a spice challenge knows all about 5 minutes and how long it can be. We have utterly amazing, horrific things happen in this world, and it's unbelievable how much it just falls out of the press. Within 2 or 3 days, half the time. How many of you remember seeing an article in June of 2022 about the Ukraine? It's over. It's over. They lost so absolutely hard over there that when the metrics, the data is coming in now, the data streams are coming in, and we didn't, well, whatever, what the mainstream media said was happening wasn't happening. So we'll just kill the story. And the public's like totally cool with it. Well, yeah, man, I don't want to talk about that crap. Personally, I don't want to talk about it either. But we don't do any inventory and assessment to make sure that we understand. Remember all that? That was lies. The reason why the story died is because it was all lies. And now they don't have to cough up the truth because they just killed the story out of your head. I was talking to a new friend of mine yesterday. We're involved in a business situation. But we got on the thing about premonitions and having either premonition dreams or premonition moments in time. She had an out-of-body experience right before 9/11. She said that this elderly sort of ancestor of hers came to her the night before 9/11 and said, "Something bad's about to happen. You don't have to stay if you don't want to. I can take you with me right now if you don't want to be here." And she said, you know, just instinctively being in a dream state, not being completely conscious, "Okay, I'll go with you." And so immediately she said, "I started feeling my soul lift out of my body." And she just had a son. And so she's like, I didn't mean like, okay, I didn't understand exactly what you meant. She went back down to her body, woke up the next day, and boom, 9/11 happens. I had the premonition of something horrible happening the next day. I saw planes in my ceiling, you know, and next day was 9/11. Could be that we're all getting messages from our ancestors, but it also could be that some of this low atmospheric technology that some people don't want to believe and to run around the internet chastising everybody who believes in it, they've created the 13th floor, the mezzanine floor that doesn't exist in the building, but it really does exist, and it's where all the evil occurs, right? And so maybe at that level, they're broadcasting down to the world, something bad's going to happen, you're going to be okay, something bad's going to happen. So when it happens the next day, we get the trauma that they need to program our minds with who did it and who done it and what's going to happen as a result of it. Maybe I manifest, I was fully conscious when mine happened. I mean, fully conscious, not even remotely in a tired state, but maybe that's how it happens, you know? The mind manufactures an illusion based on the empirical data that's coming in. Maybe it's actually some of my theories about bubbling time, that, you know, as you start entering a bubble of a moment of time, you start seeing the echoes coming into the past, as well as, obviously, the trauma that corresponds after. The moon argument is just super interesting, isn't it? There's been a sort of a mental settling that I think has occurred in the last 24 months, as per everything I've seen online. There's been a fantastic group that I believe Tim, our moderator on Facebook, he got me into it. It is probably one of the best moon conspiracy channels on Facebook I've ever seen in my life. They debut new stuff I've never seen quite frequently. But it all comes down to one thing. Wasn't it obvious that we didn't go? When you looked at the lunar module that landed on the moon, wasn't it obvious that that hunk of shit was not capable of protecting anyone inside? That it was merely built to look sort of scientific, atypical to any prop in a science fiction movie or sci-fi movie? So then it starts taking on a more literal belief system. And of course, you want to believe back in the day that it was true. And so they gave you everything you needed to believe it. I don't blame anybody who is, I'd say, 7, 8, 9 years or older seeing that on television and believing that it actually occurred. I don't blame anybody. It still convinces people to this day, when even though we have massive special effects, right? But there was a definite shift that was very quick in Hollywood, and I mean very quick, and it simply got more and more every decade they went by, exponentially more. Where they were trying to force these paradigms of scientific theory on the audience. What's interesting about it is if you look at the old Buck Rogers movies from the 30s, where space is basically the sky, as clouds all the way up there as far as you can go, you know, and they always have like these sparklers coming out of the back of the vehicles. If you really go back and watch one of those, and they're a little hard to watch, they're actually in sort of a medieval space. It's interesting. It's beautiful. I mean, hats off to these folks just blazing a trail for science fiction back in those days. They don't care if you believe the Earth is round or whatever, how a space agency is going to do something, how human beings are smart or not smart. They're just all about drama. They took a bunch of medieval classic novels and recreated them in a space setting. King Arthur became Buck Rogers. It's actually very clinical and very beautiful. You get into the 40s, you're getting a little closer to something, but there seems to be, almost because of the war, I think, sort of a recession in science fiction content in the 40s. But boy, by the 50s, oh my gosh, you got The Day the Earth Stood Still, Forbidden Planet, all the B-movies, Planet Nine. It's off the chain. how much was going on. And then if you listen to the scripts, that's what's super duper important. You have to listen to the scripts and exactly how something is said. They don't only debut new theories, but they explain them at nausea in true exhibition format, which you're not supposed to do in films. And then it's always in a condescending manner to some other character within the film, which is always vicariously you, the viewer, especially back in the time. Don't you know this? Don't you know that? It's to make you become defensive within your tribalism and your survivalism within the tribe to adopt their theories, otherwise you'll be cast out. The second that someone were to show up with a tougher, more articulate vocabulary than you have, you immediately, almost subconsciously, think they're smarter than I am, when all they have maybe is just a better vocabulary, a better way of communicating. If they could so much as grasp the fundamentals of a division of scientific theory, they got you by the small hairs for the rest of their conversation. Portrayed in film, oh my gosh, how much stuff have we seen in film that just your brain has no problem adopting what you're seeing. Forbidden Planet alone, 1956, the debut of Robbie the Robot, Leslie Nielsen playing a serious role, right? Walter Pidgeon, who was a big swashbuckler guy back in the day, plays Mobius. You immediately believe what you see, even if you can see the matte painting in the background in 2022. You keep watching that, and man, your brain just, this is the best sort of 50 sci-fi movie ever made in history. Forbidden Planet is the crown jewel of the 50s science fiction realm, or I should say, yeah, it's pretty science fiction-y versus sci-fi. And then 2001, A Space Odyssey in 68 is the massive upgrade 12 years later. What I really appreciate about 2001 is they don't do any of this agenda crap. There was a little bit of an agenda in Dr. Strangelove with making fun of people who believe that fluoride was bad for you, among other things. But what if I was to tell you that the agenda at this stage within the NASA organization, which stands for Not a Space Agency, what if the agenda at this point is not to go after the individual faux pas that they made during all the six missions to the moon and all the other missions that supposedly orbited the moon, or, you know, like Apollo 13 kind of stuff? What if they don't really care about the shadows, the zero gravity stuff, the heat and cold, the solar panel bullshit, the reflector on the moon, all this other stuff? What if that's not their agenda right now? What if their agenda is merely addressing the debate itself? Just to undermine the credibility of anyone or anything that would get you to question science in general. What is the psychosis foundation of this 2019 thing, which was debuted in 2020? It's to believe the sciences, right? Rift Tracks guys are out there making fun of every single thing that is actually true. I mean, they'll make fun of some reptilian stuff. Hey, maybe I don't believe that particular one. But a bunch of other good stuff is being made fun of, including not taking drinks in general, as we see on this show. There's an interesting phenomenon in Southern California. This is going to be an analogy. It's a real thing that happens in Southern California. It happens around the entire world, but definitely where I live. And that is to get you to buy products you could barely afford, especially fancy cars. And then what they do is they engage in a shame algorithm for guilt-tripping you into paying 2, 3, 4 times the amount for the maintenance on your car, to upgrade your car to a new car. Well, can't you afford that? I know that if you're really somebody, you can afford that. And they try to shame you into all of these expenses that you shouldn't pay. If you just talk to any other mechanic around your town, they're like, all right, I'll do it for half price, and I'll do a much more intense job, much more intimate job. Well, the same thing is the reverse engineering of you denying any of their claims. Well, do you have a degree in astrophysics? Well, then you can possibly know that I'm lying to you. You don't have the intellectual capacity to detect a lie within what I'm saying to you. Isn't that unbelievable? The other one is when you see someone cowered down to the system. It kind of establishes, well, okay, this person who's cowering down to this other person, both those people are technically famous people, technically financially okay. You know, as long as they don't have like a blow problem or something like that, right? They're going to be all right. And you're thinking, well, geez, what am I not doing to get into their realm? One, you're not selling your soul. And two, you're not selling out your very being. When you look in the mirror, you like who you see. Very important, worth more than anything. I've mentioned it a couple of times, but I want to mention again, there's the old saying that used to bother me as a child before I could intellectualize the whole saying, which they said it was harder for a rich man to get into heaven than someone who was completely broke. Usually the analogy is it's easier for a camel to walk through the eye of a needle than a rich man to get into heaven. I thought, man, that sounds like bullshit, right? So I work really, really hard and I make a bunch of money and I can't get into heaven. I mean, a camel walking through the aisle, that's never going to happen, right? Poor camel. Now, in the last, say, 5 years of making this show and listening to you guys talk to me and talking to a bunch of you personally, it's really dawned on me, it's more of an algorithm of the mind. Your lust properties, what you live for, whether or not you determine that you should help somebody else out if you can. You can't always help somebody else. That's the bummer. I mean, you could rationalize, I can always help somebody. A lot of times you can, but when you really do the algorithm of what would it take away from your life to continually help everyone else all the time, you will eventually perish yourself. And I doubt that that's the algorithm that you're supposed to prove to God. Life is a marathon, not a sprint, right? And sort of the analogy in a marathon is that there's always someone offering you something to drink on the sidelines of a marathon. You can't take every drink. You don't need every drink. But some people, you know, if you were to try to take every single one, your stomach's going to explode, right? Now, I'm going to make an episode as soon as things kind of settle down here for me, which is going to give you... I've been doing new research and downloading new things and reading new books and looking at this Facebook page, which seems to have just a whole slew of new stuff. But we are going to make a new episode that's going to be probably very long that will be every single thing that I have ever seen that negates the idea that we ever went to the moon. So you can brace for that one. It's coming. But I want to preface that episode with this episode because I want you guys to understand that I don't think they care about that debate anymore. It's kind of like all their old conspiracies and their FFs, right? Those events that are false that did occur, but they weren't who... The bad guys that made the event occur, not the same ones that they accuse. They don't really care if you focused on the past. Because it's the game today that I think is really... idiotic. And if you want to take something out of this episode and improve your life drastically, and if you want to improve your communication with the rest of the world in a better manner, there's this notion that if we expose the truth, that somehow something's going to change. And I think there's no excuse, I should say, that we understand that's bullshit. I got family members of mine, not that many, but at least a couple, that if I showed them video of the most heinous acts on planet Earth, let's just say I showed them 20 videos of one person who's their hero, a political hero, someone who works for one of the political heroes, conducting the most egregious crimes against humanity, where it's a crime so bad that there's not a sect in the world that doesn't go, yeah, that's pretty fucked up, right? These two people in my family will write some blank check to that person claiming a deep fake, which they don't even understand the concept of it, or something else. They will absolutely expunge their record immediately. Because if I don't, they're going to walk into their backyard and take their hemlock kits and kill themselves. And they don't have the courage to do the hemlock. So they're going to continue being Satan's little minion. They're going to be on the menu of Satan being a menu, making sure that all of this deception continues and continues and continues, right? So exposing the truth is really for us. yes, you can onboard people. The only thing I could possibly agree to as an effective model for our future moving forward is everyone to get out there, take whatever. That's why I love the moon missions, because it's sort of an easy start, because it didn't, Gus Grissom and, you know, the other two guys didn't make it, and I'm sure there's tons of other kind of JFK disappearance kind of situations. But overall, it's a fairly clean one to onboard to somebody. It is a gateway drug to everything else that's out there to show them. And maybe, just maybe, it trickles up to current day situations. But you will find that everyone has their little barriers. And I mean, it is unbelievable. I will talk to people all the time because I have locals that know I do this show and they're all plugged in. But I'll get to one subject matter and they can't cross that barrier. I'll tell them fact after fact after fact of what we know to be true, show them photographs of things. And they'll even look at the photographs and go, oh my God, I had no idea. I'll show Blondie cutting up a cake of her own body and holding up the heart in front of, you know, Will Ferrell and John Legend and Gwen Stefani and Hugh Jackman and all these people at this satanic party. And, oh, that's bad. But they're just like, I'm not going any further than right now. That's it. Maybe they do later on, but I doubt it. I see these people over and over again over the course of months. There's no progress. They go right back into their little kind of blissful ignorance. All right. Not everybody fights a war, that's for sure. It'll be an interesting conversation with God, in my opinion. But I wanted to kind of talk about one of the enabling things that I think onboards people to the dark side. As I said previously in this episode, they tell you a story at some point about any one topic that they know that they're doing something bad. Spraying a bunch of chemicals in the sky. They must tell people who help that process out, who have the temerity to ask a question about, well, this is pretty fucked up. What are we doing here? It's all good. It's all good. Trust me. We're fighting global warming. We're fighting aliens. This is, you know what? This actually makes you a superhuman. And the Russians are already doing it there, people. So we want to make sure our people are superhumans too. You know, there's this place called Yale University. They've got this, they got a ton of different secret societies on the campus. But one of the very first ones, and the year vacillates, I've heard conclusively several times, 1834, now I've heard it down to 32. One person claimed 38. In the 1830s, this place kind of starts. It's a group called Skull and Bones. And they have this weird ritual where you get in a coffin, you masturbate, it used to be men only, and you'd have to talk about all your sexual encounters. And you're like 18 years old doing this, which, I mean, you know, what is it? This is what I used to do at home. That's about all the sexual interactions these guys had. But as a part of the end of the ceremonies, and especially in the 21st century, I'm sure this is, goes all the way back. They think they're descendants of pirates. That's the funny thing. At least they were OG members. They make you say, death is death. Over and over and over again. Death is death. Death is death. In a bunch of different ways. Why do they do that? Because what they want to train their people to believe in is that there is no God, there is no afterlife, and that death is death. Why would they want to do that? What's the point of that? Well, obviously getting rid of God gets rid of a moral fiber in your system. It turns you into a minion of their demand. And every time they call you in some Eyes Wide Shut situation to say, we are now blackmailing you to do what the hell we want you to do. And believe me, you'll be rich only on earth until you die, if you're lucky. Most of them are pretty lucky. Most of them are hitting their graves without ever, ever paying a price. But by God, the one they're going to pay after they leave this place, trust me, you wouldn't trade places with any of their wealth on earth for that kind of infinite payment they're going to make on the other side, right? It's like there are people out there that understand that when they tried to onboard people hundreds and thousands of years ago into these deep organizations and tried to sell out their own population and their own people, their own family members, okay, their own offspring, they found the moral fiber in man. The, I think, genetic beacon back to their souls, which connects back to the universe, which in itself is nothing but love and morality. at its most primal common law definition. Not all this spin on what is, you know, these micro sins and all this other stuff. Just stick to the basic meat and potatoes, man. Thou shalt not kill. Thou shalt not harm another being. Do no harm to another human being. They realized, I guarantee you, over 2,000 years ago, if not tens of thousands of years ago, they have to condition the members out of this moral fiber, this connection to the universe. Should you pollute your pineal gland with a bunch of dust called fluoride and other things? Oh, shit, man. I'm just going to shut down your actual physical connection to your soul. What little is going to leak through, it's not going to change your mind. Because the second I get you laid, the second I get you all that property that you want, by also getting you addicted to the desire for it in the first place, I got you, man. I got you forever. There's a great movie called Three Amigos. And within that movie, there's a little lesson for all of us in this realm. I don't know if you guys remember how the movie starts, but after they do the intro and show us how the three amigos do what they do inside the silent films that they portray, the three amigos come into the studio with Flugelman, the guy who runs the place. Every actor's phenomenal in this movie. John Lovitz and Phil Hartman are in there. But they apparently have, on the side, decided that they're going to ask for more money, but they haven't really let us know, the audience know that. And so Flugelman's pitching them a brand new movie after telling them the last movie just crashed. They strayed from their formula. It wasn't a success. So now we're going to go back and you are going to be the three amigos like you normally are. And Steve Martin says this funny ass line in the front of the movie. He goes, he's about to negotiate with Flugelman for more money and he doesn't know what the hell he's doing, right? And he goes, that'll be the day. He's like, what? What did he say? He said, that'll be the day, Mr. Flugelman. He's like, what? And he goes, I don't think, you know who you're talking to here. And so then they start to ask for more money. And Flugelman's like, did you not hear a word I just said? I just said your last movie was a flop. I had to pay money to keep you guys in business. And he goes, you know what? You hit me on a bad day. Where do you live again? And they look at each other like, oh, we stay in the studio mansion. Get him out of the mansion. Phil Hartman makes his phone call. Get him out of the mansion. Aren't those clothes our property? Well, no, they're gifts. You know, Martin Short starts saying, no, these are gifts. We get to keep these guys. Take their wardrobe. Wardrobe instantly shows up, takes their clothes off. So in a few seconds, they lose where they live and they lose their clothing. They're out on the streets in just behind one of the back lots, right? Now, luckily, of course, in the movie, a telegram shows up and they get a job in Mexico. The premise of the movie, I'm sure all of you have seen it, but if you haven't seen it, it's that someone watched their movies in Mexico. They have this villain called El Guapo who keeps terrorizing the village, and they think the three amigos are real. So they hire the three amigos, promise them 100,000 pesos to come down and perform in their little village, chase away this guy El Guapo. They think it's a performance. By the time they get this abbreviated telegram, they think they're going down to be movie stars. They show up and they actually have to fight El Guapo. But they're just three actors. I guess you could maybe say washed up actors because of Flugelman firing them. But what happens in this film? The three actors become the real three amigos through the hardship of the whole thing. The analogy is this. We would love for these people who keep selling us out to just go ahead and be good and to feel the true spirit of being good in their life, to become the truly decent politician that they were elected to be. But instead, they stay the actors. And who becomes the three amigos in this world? We become the three amigos in this world. The more they screw up the universe, the more they screw up this planet, the more they make it hard for us, we have to hustle or we die. The silver lining of all this horrific crap that's going on in the universe right now, meaning our world, is that we're getting tougher and tougher and tougher. Not something we would order in a catalog for ourselves. If you really look at, I can only speak for Americans, okay? And of course, there is always poverty areas in America of all races, of all creeds. But the most affluent areas of this country have definitely spent 3 decades inside opulence of ridiculousness, engaging in purchasing things they do not need. How do you think we have hoarders? I mean, is a hoarder a society that is balanced, or a society that is providing too much to crazy people who have stacks of brand new items up to the ceilings in their houses, to the point they just have about an 18-inch corridor to get to the bathroom, to get to the kitchen, living in complete fire hazards of toxicity? It's because this country gained too much too quickly with no education about how to maintain a normal, balanced life. One of the things RiffTrax does is they make fun of shorts. Shorts are little tiny public service announcements, marketing videos, videos on how to teach your kids how to cross the street, how not to set yourself on fire. Apparently, we used to wash clothes with gasoline in, I guess, the 40s, and they had to actually make a video telling women, don't wash your clothes in gasoline because you need any type of spark in the kitchen, you're going to blow your whole house up. Apparently, this was a problem, right? But what I think was interesting, there was a point in the 50s, the Leave It to Beaver sort of era, where women were watching these videos, I mean, men too, but it was aimed at women, to show them the kitchen of tomorrow. You know, washers and dryers were a big deal. The way an oven worked was a big deal. Having a timer on an oven was just like space age technology. Those were good progressions in technology, good improvements in the way that we were running our world. But today it's like your 10-year-old comes to you and says, I deserve a $1,000 telephone with a $60 a month plan. Plus, I deserve that $1,000 PlayStation 5 plus $80 video games. I need to have at least 50 games. I have to have the best clothing. By the way, I want the earbuds. Oh, I lost my earbuds. Can I get new earbuds? Oh, I found my old earbuds. I'll just give it to my friend. I deserve a brand new car the second I can drive. This is where America, I can say, unequivocally lost its way. The parents don't help, because the parents are looking at the guy down the street. I mean, I always thought that the Jones Me thing sort of died in the 80s when the British series came out called Keeping Up Appearances. I thought that that had actually externalized the lunacy of the algorithm of neighbors copying neighbors. Well, he's got an RV. I need an RV. He's got a golf cart. I need a golf cart. Jet skis, fancy car, blah, 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 pool in the backyard, whatever. No, in my world, in Southern California, and I've heard this the same way in the Midwest, it's still completely off the chain. This country, without major change, the world is going into a depression, higher and bigger and better and faster than the depression in the 1930s. And people are still blowing money like it's falling out of the fucking sky, man. Think about that moon mission. Think about the sentient thought process that needs to take place to identify the fact that it didn't occur, to study facts, to have even 5 minutes of thought to focus on the fact that anything is wrong in your world at all. People who are new to this show, and I haven't had this in a really long time, which just kind of makes me happy, they say, oh, well, why don't you make like 5 minute versions of your show? Dude, you really need to make like 15 minute versions of your show. And I said, look, man, did you watch an episode? Yeah. Did you like it? Oh, totally, man. I was just totally zoned out to it. It was cool. And I was like, okay, what the hell would make it better if I made it 5 minutes, man? What kind of theory could I drop on you in 5 minutes? 15 minutes? Half an hour? We'd just be getting to the good part, and I'd be done. All because you have a short attention span? What are we trying to do on this show? Rebuild society from the bottom up. I've been saying that since 2015. Big part of it is critical thinking. And I think indirectly, I didn't even realize this was my byproduct, which is to have an attention span. I just assume you did, and most of you do. I mean, anyone who watches the show all the time, you have an attention span. Your mind is doing great. We may not even agree on theories, but it doesn't matter. We could sit down and smoke a stick, and boom, we would have the best conversation on planet Earth. Somehow, one of us has to invent a teleporter so that we can all do that. But I'll tell you, there's a sort of a paradigm shift that I have personally experienced, that I've shared with you this several times in little tidbits, and I think I've had some epiphanies on how I've been perceiving this whole thing, so I want to share it all in one batch for you, just in case you're on a similar journey that I'm on. which is that we, as I always say, you know, we grow up the pinball and the pinball machine. We're not controlling the flippers, the bumpers, the kickers, the magnetrons. We're just being pushed around this pinball machine. And at some point, arbitrarily, in the age of each one of us, we start to realize that we're actually a pinball. We start to realize that there are kickers, bumpers, and flippers. And so we pull the brake on this whole thing. And we say, you know what? I don't think I'm going to let you control me anymore. I, you know, some areas I don't mind. Some areas, like, I want to go on an amusement park and they just entertain me, man. That's, you know, I want to go to Vegas, just entertain me. You're releasing your control, but you still took yourself there. And you still are sentient to when you want to get off the ride, sort of thing, and not ride any more rides. But what I have figured out, I don't know if I want to keep this analogy rolling, but what I have figured out for me personally is my perception of reality itself is so different. And it has to do with many of your comments on YouTube, many of your comments on Facebook. You know, again, I'm moving over to Truth Social. Just go to Deep Thoughts Radio on Truth Social. You'll find me there. I'm on Rumble. Still just kind of rumbling a rumble. I'm not sure that this reality that I keep trying to parse, I keep trying to make sense of the moon missions, which exist 100% within the sort of off-the-shelf reality that I was born to believe really exists in my life. I'm starting to look at the whole thing going, maybe it's not even remotely what I think it is, right? I can't shake the fact that, and you guys recently heard me say this, that the moon is a burned out sun. It is an ash object in space. It is spherical. You can see the perspective foreshortening around the craters, but they're not craters created from meteorites. They're craters created from volcanic pops because it used to be on fire. It used to boil. If I needed you and challenged you to find a substance here on Earth that looks like the moon, you'd have to go to a fireplace. That's where you're going to find it. Around a volcano, perhaps, maybe oxidized volcanic ash, maybe, is going to look like the stuff that the moon seems to be blatantly made out of, right? But you're not allowed to say that. Well, if that thing is some construct, and if Plato's talk about the time before the moon, where his elders never saw the moon, apparently Native Americans, according to one of your comments, also had no knowledge of the moon for a long time and said it suddenly appeared. There's a book called Who Invented the Moon, man. Now, do I believe David Icke's thing about it being a space station? No, I don't. Do I believe John Lear that we have space bases all over, alien space bases all over it? I don't. I could believe that, but I'm going to need a whole bag of different information. How does the moon perfectly eclipse the sun? I apparently just found out recently that, I think it was Robert Heinlein, he also said that the moon cannot just be some arbitrary rock in space. It has definitely been placed there. It is that size for a particular reason, which is actually fascinating because the idea is that the sun would be, if any of this is true, the sun is literally built to be a specific diameter with a specific heat. It is absolutely perfect for photosynthesis inside our plant life and also keeping every thing with a heart pumping. It's no wonder Bill Gates wants to block your sun without your fucking permission. How is that even possible, man? It's like Bill Gates decides you shouldn't have as much electricity as you have in your house, and it just suddenly can fucking become true. Bill Gates wants you to eat fucking GMO food, and suddenly you have to eat GMO food. You don't have a choice, man. You know, what is it? They want to release these genetically engineered mosquitoes. You don't have a choice. And this stuff could be plugging you with all kinds of crap. Zika viruses and that kind of shit that's all fucking patented by the Rockefellers, right? At some point, we got to organize. At some point, we got to fight back this crap. At some point, we get a vote. But I think, you know, the summation of what I'm trying to say right now is that I think I've been fighting to somehow make sense of a matrix. And then if you start to look at a matrix and divorce yourself from its existence, and again, I don't think it's quite the software matrix that we have for World of Warcraft, where it's like, I don't like building, make building go away. Why would there ever be any mud flooding? There wouldn't be any mud flooding. It'd just be these buildings disappear. And again, I want to stress that just as a follow-up to the Tartarian thing, that a ton of the buried levels underneath buildings has to do with the fact that buildings were built on soil before it was leveled to be a town. A lot of the, imagine you had a little village and you're just building huts where there's a clearing. Later, that village becomes a town. The town becomes a city. And you eventually go, okay, we need plumbing, we need electricity, and we don't want to have the land doing this constantly, right? It's not going to be San Francisco. So we're going to start leveling the earth, and you're going to start losing, some of you are going to lose a lot of your first floors. Now, I don't think that's a mystery. Now, the ones in Europe where you've got entire cities underneath, multiple levels, that's where you start going, okay, that doesn't look like leveling the ground. That looks like somebody built on top of another society. So there's still a theory there, but don't get all caught up just because one level gets buried underneath some mud. It's just, they put the mud there in most cases. Again, in the 1800s, 1850s in, I think, London, there was 10 years where they told everyone, you know, you have been given a letter about how much of your property needs to be leveled up, and you are responsible for leveling up the street in front of your place. Otherwise, we'll do it for you and we'll charge you for it. So that actually was a real thing. It's been heavily documented. So not everything's a conspiracy, but there's still some stuff there. But I was thinking about the UFO hearing thing I did. And the fact that these guys seem to be kind of wink, wink, nudge, nudging through the entire hearing about the word extraterrestrial versus terrestrial. Let me throw this out. And I think one of you gave me a comment, and I think this is what you might have been alluding to. And I read it, and I didn't quite understand what one of you said. I think I got this right. There is this ever-growing theory of a map where we're in this container with an ice barrier around it, and that outside that ice barrier is another set of continents, more plentiful and bigger than the ones inside, and that beyond that there's more rings and more continents, and that we might be on a ball, but it's just absolutely gigantic. I don't really give a shit about what size it is. But imagine that these other societies and these other continents would, I think, most obviously be human beings in genome. Probably different in some cases, like the Basque brain or that, something like that. And that some of these vehicles are just simply coming in from those other continents. So these guys sitting in the Senate hearing are saying, no, we don't have anything that's extraterrestrial. But what they're telling you is everything's terrestrial. It's just you don't know where we are. And you don't know who lives on those other continents. Maybe grays live on those other continents. Maybe a bunch of freaking species live in these different continents. I'd be shocked if we had, not that shocked, but shocked if there were truly another species living in the outer continents and that we're somehow some zoo cage in the center. But I mean, there's plenty of Twilight Zones and other sci-fi movies where they capture human beings and keep human beings in sort of a controlled environment to observe. And the way that you can really rationalize this extremely easily, in my opinion, is if you had the capability of doing this, wouldn't you do it? If somebody said, look, did you watch Westworld on HBO? Oh, yeah, it was fucking badass. It was, at least the first season was amazing. Well, if we could build that, would you go? Hell yes, I would go. I mean, I get to be a Western cowboy. I get to come in as Doc Holliday or just some average Joe. Hang out in saloons. And if I want to pull a gun and shoot a bad guy, it's not even a real dude because the guns won't hurt the guests. It'll only hurt the hosts. You don't think we would build that place? Hell yeah, we'd build that place. You have to have sex with anybody you want, and you won't even know that they're not human unless you cut their head off and look at their mechanics inside. I think that'd sell pretty fast, right? So the only difference between that actually being a reality and being a fictional show on television is that somebody actually has the technology to do it. If that's indeed the case, then the moon mission situation either could have intentionally started off to be this thing I'm about to share, or could have evolved into this theory. The idea that it evolved into a perfect theory is pretty hard to believe. All of what I'm about to say is hard to believe. But if they said, okay, we're now starting to travel, we're now starting to get private aircraft, even in the 50s, right? So they're going to sign this treaty. Apparently it's late 50s, 58, not 54. No one's allowed to go to the South Pole because that's the door out. And so we're going to all get together. It's going to be the fastest treaty that hundreds of different countries have signed eventually over the last 50 years. No one's allowed to go. I mean, you can visit, you can do ice samples and be a geologist and stuff. And we might even take you inland quite a ways and tell you that that's the South Pole and you can work in a base and you think you're there, but you're not even remotely close. Because maybe the barrier goes a long way. I mean, you know, we don't know. We don't know. But if the idea is to say we have to take the people off the scent of the path, that we are truly inside a container. So let's do a fake mission to the moon so that we can engineer an excuse. In terms of the ICBMs, which were really the operation, Well, there's a bunch of debates as to whether or not atomic bombs are real. You know, I'm still like trying to figure out how Hiroshima had people seeing this bomb go off and a bunch of people disappear, and how suddenly they, who are PTSD'd for life, and we're talking, there's a few people that get on television, but there's tens of thousands of people who were mentally ill after that. But again, you shouldn't be able to live at ground zero for a long time based on the principles of radiation of a nuclear bomb, but people went right back into ground zero, rebuilt Hiroshima, and it's fine today. My friend was a person who was born in 1944, and by the early 50s, his father was a test pilot for the Air Force, and he grew up in Hiroshima. He saw the damage that this bomb did. So if it's a firebomb, whatever. But anyway, a mechanism to control the people in the container was also had by ICBMs, by making everyone fearful of their surroundings. Wow. So you get a theory of where you are, plus Hollywood's pounding this narrative in your brain. Dinosaurs existed, which really didn't, and space exists, which it really doesn't. We've been to the moon, which we really haven't. We're going to launch this bullshit stuff to Mars, which we really haven't. And we're going to freak you out because we're going to start a cold war between the two biggest physical countries on planet Earth. Sounds pretty ingenious to me, man. Now, I'm going to take a step, put a little toe in Tartarian kind of theory. It's not a Tartarian theory about those people, but the guy that owns this lounge is doing lots of research on old maps. And he has proven that my previous episodes were just the tip of the iceberg. I thought I had a decent understanding of old maps, and I had nothing of the sort. There are dozens and dozens and dozens of maps that are hundreds of years old. And they are longitudinally correct. They also have maps of entire areas like Russia, where there's thousands of cities all over the maps. I mean, like every square foot of the entire continent is completely captured and has a city name on it. Obviously, someone could make these in the recent day, but apparently these have been sold and they're in books and they've been around for a really long time. Now, what I was told in my official research, which is, this is official news, right, was the Royal Academy of Sciences put out a contest in the mid-1800s for a device that could track longitudinal degrees accurately, such that the distortion that was in all the maps, especially on a horizontal level, but it affects all axes if you can't get a longitudinal degree to be accurate, especially sailing a boat. But anywhere you are on land, using the stars and the sun and trying to figure out where you are. Apparently, it's a timepiece that's also related to it when you're on a boat. They had a contest. As I remember it, and I could have remembered it wrong, I believe it was like 100,000 pounds if you could come up with a device that did it. And a dude did it. But what that does is that says that no maps beyond or before 1850 could have been accurate in this sense. But there are plenty of maps that are accurate. I mean, I would say, well, considering that the globes are wrong because the Peter projection map is not in the globes, and that's the most accurate map supposedly we have, might just be the UN logo, that there's some explaining to do, right? The reason why I mention that is that calls backwards in time to a time when, how do I put this? We were mega sophisticated. And all of you know that. I mean, one way or the other, whether you studied the pyramids or ancient civilizations, I mean, it looks like, again, Tartarian theory of all these amazing buildings that are already falling apart by the time we find them and we take photographs of them in the 1800s. It's like they were built in the 1200s or something. Now, again, there's plenty of excuses we could make about why these buildings fall apart, but they're all over the place in areas of the world where the locals don't have the sophistication to have even an automobile or even horse and buggy. The wheel is missing from some of these regions, which have the most ornate architecture you've ever seen in your life. I want to ask you, because the episode's called The Debate of the Moon, you might be a little frustrated I wandered around, but I want to ask you, outside of man creating fire, discovering how to make fire reliably, and man discovering the wheel, what is the next biggest single accomplishment that man could have ever put on a piece of paper after those two accomplishments? And I would wager and debate that going to the moon was the third one, even though mathematics and ethereal sciences is in there somewhere. That's a big algorithm to try to say it's just a single thing that we did. Now, of course, going to the moon wasn't like flipping a switch, even if they were able to have ever pulled it off. But for me, in the history of mankind, as we have currently had our history revised into the current form that you find in a library or bookstore or online, in Wikipedia or some bullshit apparatus like that, the moon is this pivotal moment where man has a upgrade of perception in man. I know for a fact, Buzz Aldrin's talked about it in interviews, as he's admitting we didn't go. He's also saying, you know, when he toured the world as an astronaut that went to the moon, that everyone around the world said, we went to the moon, we did this. And he goes, I'm going into countries that don't even have a space program, but they still feel like we, mankind, went to the moon. And that's amazing. There's a book out there, 2001, about 2001, A Space Odyssey, and how they simulated HAL 9000 computers responsible for tens of thousands of engineers in the 60s and 70s turning into AI coders. It's just a movie, man. Yeah, sir. Certainly, Alan Turing came up with the first lineage of trying to make computers think. I think the guy's a complete enigma in himself. Considering he was attached to this fake project called Project Enigma, I think is very ironic. No evidence that those things ever existed again, right? The guy is chemically castrated, and they were going to chemically castrate him, and so he committed suicide. Guy saved the world from World War II, can't get a free have sex with Ben pass. Are you kidding me? They'd probably let that guy do anything, right? You know, on one hand, we're supposed to believe that these royalty figures engage in all this crazy satanic ritual, which I believe is real for some of them. And they care whether or not he has sex with a man to the point they don't cut the guy a blank check in the courts of Britain and say, yeah, he just saved us. He created the Project Enigma machine, the Enigma machine that broke the German code, saved us years of war and millions of lives. And you know, we're going to buy the guy island and put a bunch of men on there. He's going to have the best time of his life. That's what would have really happened had the story been true. I think the moon thing is a massive pivotal moment for man. Massive. And the debate around it is still as important as it ever was. And I think that we're in a flow mode. Right, we're in a flow, we're going with the flow right now, we're not ebbing against it right now, we're going with it right now, and there's certainly more important immediate agendas that are being thrown at us, and so we're not focused on this thing, and I don't blame anybody for being unfocused, but I know that you guys love the subject matter, and I do too. The amount of times I talk about it in my personal life is really incredibly off the chain, right? But I just want to remind you guys that there's a lot of factors around this, and I'd be really interested in your take on its pivotal nature, Don't worry, we will get back to the traditional dissecting of the entire thing. It's food for thought. Let me just tell you, I know you feel me. Anyway, if you haven't been to deepthoughtsradio.com, please go. Everything is there. I'll make a short bumper today. For those of you who support the show through mainly Patreon lately, I super duper appreciate it. You make the world happen. I have arranged to be recording here once every Sunday night to get you guys an episode once a week at minimum. The backyard that my friend offered to me is actually having a pool replaced, so it's going to be sort of too tossed up to make that happen. I will probably be going to my friend's house in Pasadena and maybe filming there as well, but that'll be just a random thing. I can't guarantee you guys. But anyway, take care of yourself and someone else, and I'll see you in the next Deep Thoughts. Over now.